the bubble. Good evening and welcome to Burst the Bubble live on Cam FM. I'm Michael Quintero and I'm joined by my guest today, Dave Birch.
Hello.
And Tom Woolley.
Hello.
And this is a show about the more unusual news from the past week. So we're going to get right into that with our section on animals. It seems to be a section that is recurring very often in this show. Occasionally we have a technology section, but I think animals are by far and away the most represented news story, which I think just goes to show something about what gets in the news.
I'll say the British do love animals.
We do.
There are a lot of animals in the world.
Yes, there are. We've covered stories with a great variety of animals, and in fact there's a little bit of variety in our first story, which is that UK fire services have spent over £3.5 million on rescuing animals in the past 3 years, and that's on 17,000 animals. The thing about this, though, is that this news stories have actually had a list of what animals they've been rescuing. They rescued a cow out of a tree.
I don't think that cows are really the kind of thing that the fire service should be rescuing. I mean, traditionally, stereotypically, you have a cat in a tree, and you take two firemen out with a fire engine, and one of them points the fire hose and fires, and the other one catches it. But if there's a cow stuck in a tree, then I think you're just going to flatten the fireman. It's not going to work. So that's presumably why it's so expensive.
But even before that point, at what point did people think, you know, firemen, they're doing a great job stopping fires and all, but you know, at what point did people think, you know, firemen, they're doing a great job stopping fires and all, but, you know, they're just not earning their pay enough. We need to give them an extra job. You know, so they need to go start saving animals. I don't see the leap from firemen to tree cat getter outer. I don't get it.
I'm assuming most of it is because at some point there was a cat in a building that got rescued by a fireman.
They're the ones with the ladders.
Yeah, and they kind of went, hang on a minute. This situation, although it involves fire, which is the chief purview of the fire service, it bears remarkably many similarities to this cat which is stuck up this tree.
Presumably there were no superheroes around to rescue the cat.
Oh, no.
We do have a big shortage of superheroes. So the fire brigade, you know, people want to be a superhero or a fireman when they grow up. If you can't be one, I guess that's what we do. We have firemen to fill in the gaps.
Well, it does say in the article that if they weren't doing it, then normal people would do it and they'd just hurt themselves. Which I love that patronising tone. Is that if we weren't getting the cat out of the tree, you'd just hurt yourself. Don't do it. You know, you need a superhero or a fireman. You're too stupid to get a cat out of a tree.
Also, the cat is too stupid to get out of the tree in the first place.
Well, there's that point as well. It got in there, surely. You know.
No, I can confirm that. About 4 or 5 years ago, my family's pet cat did get caught up a tree, and it was too stupid to come down. It was up there for 5 or 6 hours.
But were you too stupid to not go and get it and call the fire brigade?
I wasn't stupid enough to go up there. We sent my brother up there, and he just kind of pokes Sparky with a stick.
Is he now a fireman?
He's not a fireman, no. He's a student support officer in Bradford. Kind of similar.
I can see the crossover.
Like holding up students? Like when they've been out and had too much to drink?
He's the one putting them in trees.
He supports them up to the top of the tree to get the cat.
You've got to get the cones up there somehow.
But no, so what I really loved about this news story is as they're giving the list, so that they've got the cow in the tree and whatever, but my favourite one in the list is they had a call and they had to take a snail off a wall.
Oh, the snail.
That is, at that point, I just thought I'd finish the list, and they had to save a fish from drowning. I really did think you'd get to that level of idiocy. But they do clarify later down that the woman that called, they sent the fireman out to help her rather than the snail. So money well spent, I think.
She was perturbed. It had been there for a while. It wasn't going anywhere fast.
But when they say a snail stuck halfway up a wall, do you think they mean it got up there and just panicked, had some
sort? I don't know what to do.
No, it's like I'm too high.
Yeah,
antenna just going back and forth, like trying to. Perhaps it's like waving its antenna in some sort of SOS signal.
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? But intelligent snails.
I don't think snails know semaphore.
No, not semaphore.
Morse code. Semaphore is far too complicated.
That would be a good project, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So you could teach gorillas sign language, teaching snails Morse code. You've got funding right there.
I also like the fact that this implies that part of the fire The fireman's job now is also to help reassure old ladies. because they do say it wasn't the fact that there was a snail stuck over halfway at the wall. It was we sent a couple of blokes down the road to help lady and to reassure her. That was merited.
Well, they've got experience if they're rescuing cats from trees. It just
rescuing old ladies from trees.
Well, rescuing old ladies' cats from trees. The thing I love most about this story is actually they provided like a league table of different counties and the number of animals each one had. And London's at the top with like 1,500, and then there's like a top 10 of how many animals each county fire service has rescued. As if, I don't know, it's a competition or it's remotely fair to compare them because they're the same size. It's completely pointless statistics. I guess the money is not pointless, but here we go. Look, London, 1,623, North Yorkshire. 526.
So what conclusions do we get from that? Do you just conclude that there are more animals in London, there are stupider animals in London, or just that there are fewer fires in London these days?
Well, we need a breakdown of what all these things, the animals are. Because, I mean, how many snails are counted in that? How many tigers, how many lions, how many cats in trees? We need to know this. I mean,
It does seem to be a trend that actually they rescue fewer animals the further north you go.
Yeah, no, northern animals are just hardier.
Get off that wall. Stop being stupid. Come on, Dan. Go on.
They know what they're about.
They've actually got a list of
what
animals were included in this, as well as it was just the single solitary snail, sadly. But there was also a chameleon, 5 seals, and 7 dolphins or marine mammals.
A chameleon? Was it that the owner couldn't find it? It was too well camouflaged. Help! I need assistance. You know?
There's one raccoon on this list. I guess the police deal with most of them.
I'll say they do look like little bandits, don't they?
But there we go.
Also, how many fish was that? They rescue fish? How did the
rescue them from drowning?
11 fish.
They haven't come up for air for ages. We need to send a diver down.
Do you think it was a case of, well, we've rescued the cat from the tree and we've gone away again, and then we've been called out again because now some fish in a local pond are being attacked by a cat? And hang on a moment.
You got
they're just making more work for themselves.
And then they happen to save a dog. And in fact, we're going to just make an entire song out of this.
I think I've heard this one. Didn't a woman eat a fly at one point? I think an old woman swallowed a fly.
And then a firefighter went down to try and rescue the fly.
I don't remember that verse.
Oh dear. If you've got any stories about animals being rescued, you can email them to us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or by using the form on our website, which is www.camfm.co.uk. We're going to move on to our next story now, which is possibly even more cute.
I hate cuteness.
This is that the new panda enclosure at Edinburgh Zoo is going to have a special nursery for some cubs.
They're not like scouts and cubs. You have a pen for cubs just to view the pandas and scouts next
door. It's connected to the petting zoo.
That's
a good idea. That's a good idea. We should do that.
The interesting thing here is that the nursery is just being built on a hope. Because two pandas are due to arrive from China, and they're building a nursery just in case.
So I thought they had actually signed some contracts. Do you mean to say that they haven't?
Well, the pandas have signed a contract.
Yeah, the pandas are down for a 3-record deal. And they're working with Simon Cowell at the moment. From the winner of X Factor, they're going to go do the Royal Variety Performance.
I thought you meant like a marriage contract.
Oh, there's that too as well.
Yes.
I'm completely lost.
But also, the panda home will have pools, caves, and climbing structures. Does that mean structures which actually start climbing?
That sounds like centre parks. Pools, climbing frames, and, you know.
I think...
If you've got a spa there, you know.
That's all very well and good, but surely food would be my first choice.
They do mention food at the end of this article, which is really nice. They say that it's going to cost £6,000, is that right? £6,000 in bamboo.
£6,000 a month.
£6,000 a month in food. And then they say, but this should reduce if we could start growing our own bamboo. I don't know how much bamboo grows in Scotland. I'm guessing not much.
Locally sourced Scottish bamboo.
Organic sourced bamboo. It'd be great.
Well, you know, pandas, they have to go organic. I mean, you've seen them on the little like logo of the wildlife thing. I mean, if you're on a logo of a wildlife charity, you've pretty much got to
Yeah,
you gotta agree with everything that they say, and I'm sure they'll say organic is better.
Strict moral standards. You have to be held up to a high code of ethics.
Also, each panda is going to have its own space because they're solitary animals in the wild and only come together to breed. Which, frankly, that and the bamboo costs tell you pretty much all you need to know about why pandas are dying out.
No. There's so many reasons. They hate each other. Biologically, they're just designed for their own self-destruction. They're beautiful animals, but they're not going to be around for very much longer. Go to Scotland. See them while you can.
If they're solitary animals with their own spaces and a special place for them to breed, are they pumping Barry White in, perhaps, just to kind of set the mood? Is that a public viewing room, or is that a private room that only they can go into? Because
it does say that there's, like, we have a large expanse of glass to give views into the panda nursery, which is what people want to see.
Which is going to be empty.
But the enclosure has been designed to accommodate 600 spectators an hour.
Oh, 600 pandas for a moment. 600 spectators per hour.
Yeah, they're expecting big viewings here.
That's an unusual measurement. Spectators per hour. You
know, here is a big bear eating some bamboo. That's about it, really.
Kind of cute.
But yeah, that's 10 spectators per minute.
Yeah. No,
they're just running through.
One every 6 seconds. You get 6 seconds. Off you go.
Perhaps they're going to install one of those little travelators like they have when you go and see the crown jewels.
Really? I thought you were talking about the gladiator kind of traveling. You have to run it at this point backwards.
Only the fittest can see our pandas.
Yeah, exactly.
Only the fittest can see the least fit animal. Well,
it's natural selection.
I said there's something quite ironic. You have to be fit to get up there to see these animals which aren't. There's something beautiful symmetry about that.
But, I meant the ones you get at airport because you don't have to walk so far. But they have them going in. When you're looking at the crown jewels, obviously, so that you don't like stay there and watch so long. It's like you see it from different angles.
Who watches the crown jewels? I mean, that's less interesting than a panda eating bamboo, surely.
Prospective thieves. I mean, you want a good look at them, right?
Yeah, that's true. Get all the angles. Well, if they're traveling you around the crown jewels, you'd get all the angles right there, aren't you?
Yeah.
And just making their life easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea. Why do we do that?
So we agree. No travelators in the panda enclosure. Or did we agree on panda? I don't know.
It would only give thieves a better opportunity to see steal them all angles and steal them.
Although the pandas themselves look like bandits as well, like the raccoons. They've got that mask already built in, don't they? Can you identify this panda? No, he was wearing a mask. You know, it's hard.
Yeah, if there was a lot of panda-related crime that suddenly happened around Edinburgh Zoo, though, it's not going to be difficult to work out which panda it is.
Depends how well they breed.
You're not going to have much trouble working out how much...
Given your white tiger story last week, I think the police working out which animal is which...
Last week they found there was a bit of a problem where there was a white tiger on the loose, which turned out to be a cuddly toy.
They discovered it was a cuddly toy when their police helicopter flipped it over as they were getting in for a closer look.
A police helicopter?
They got a helicopter out for it, and with the infrared cameras, and like, this doesn't seem to be showing anything.
And they had guys with rifles, and they had two police officers on the ground who confirmed that it was looking at them.
So, wait, was this, a life-size tiger toy?
Yeah,
it's
a stuffed tiger, yeah.
Okay. Of the sort that one might win at a fun fair.
Right, it had just been left.
It was really cute.
I missed that story, obviously.
Perhaps that's how the pandas would commit crime. They'd go and commit the crime and then just leave a cuddly panda there.
sign of the panda. Also, quite topical, Kung Fu Panda coming out. You know, they're not just, you know, biologically bad, they're also bad at Kung Fu.
You've absolutely got me with topical films. I'm lost with films. I do Kung Fu Panda. I thought Kung Fu Panda came out years ago.
No, that was the original one. So there's a number two coming out. I don't know how they're going to stretch the story for two, because I mean, they didn't really stretch it for one. But you know, it's going to be interesting.
Kung Fu Panda 2: The Breeding.
No!
I've invented a new martial arts style. It's sequel style. You thought that I was only going to hit you once, but I'm going to hit you again.
Oh dear. Move on. Next story.
Our final animal story for this week is that McDonald's have turned away a couple who arrived at their drive-thru in a horse-drawn carriage. They could only serve certain types of vehicles for health and safety reasons.
Health and safety.
So, which I assume means that they're quite happy serving a car but not a horse.
Well,
serving certain types of vehicles.
Towards the end of this article, they have a quote from the spokesman, and they were saying that we can't serve bikes, motorbikes, or horses. I just like how they added that on at the end, because normally you wouldn't have to add that. It's like, normally they don't serve motorbikes. Okay, fair enough. And horses. We also don't serve pygmy hippos. We don't serve albatrosses. You could just have a whole zoo.
People on jetpacks.
Yeah.
Health and safety and jetpacks are a nightmare. I was looking at this thinking, well, maybe if the drive-through is really straight and long and straight and the horses can only move forward and diagonally a bit, then maybe they won't be able to get down the drive-through, and it's a health and safety issue for that. And you can't pay by check anymore either.
Have you ever been to a McDonald's and paid by check?
No, because you can't.
Well, no, not anymore, but have you ever done that? Would you want to do that?
I think, no.
No. Yeah, that'll be £3.50. Hold on, I have my checkbook.
I cannot think of a good reason to justify my chest pun.
I have to make an admission here. When Michael sent me this story, I was reading it, and it's from Derbyshire. And I thought, oh, this will be interesting, because I live in Derbyshire. And then I read a bit further, and the woman's from Pinkston. I live quite close to Pinkston. And it turned out that the McDonald's she was actually refused service at was in Alfreton. I live in Alfreton. So I just want to make it clear that Alfreton is a wonderful place. It's not medieval. We don't have mud tracks anymore. We don't burn the BT guys because we think they're witches. We are a modern town. You know, this is just... I mean, we have lots of horse and carts going around. He was great-great-great-uncle. He used to be a rag and bone man, and he used to come around, and it was brilliant. But I just want to point out...
He used to come around and visit you.
Yeah, he used to come around and collect all the old fridges and stuff and then go off to the McDonald's and get served quite happily. You know, no. But I just want to make sure it clear that Alfreton, nice place, not full of nutters.
So if you can't serve a horse and carriage due to health and safety, there's got to be a line somewhere where it's okay on one side and it's not on the other. So somewhere in the middle, pantomime horses? If you had a pantomime horse, because presumably a carriage by itself would be fine, because a horseless carriage is okay, because that's a car and you can serve a car. So if you put pantomime horses on a carriage, that's a horseless carriage.
On that thing, I was reading the comments to the story, and someone had put, they'd gone through a drive-through with someone in a trolley. In a supermarket trolley, and they'd just gone through, and the guy on the other end said, I'm not happy about this, but I will serve you. So, on some level, it's up to the person's discretion.
I think you made a fundamental error in that you read the comments on a news story.
Oh, I know. I won't ever do that again. there are idiots out there.
So the key point here is that Debbie Murden, who was riding the carriage... said, why, if horses and motorbikes are not allowed through, why are there no signs to say so?
That's it, horses and motorbikes. I love that. It's like, okay, I can see why motorbikes would need a sign. They're a little bit more common. Horses.
Yeah.
But the thing I was saying about the comments, I would have thought this story would get a lot of backing. You know, people going, oh, health and safety has gone mad. You know, that kind of story. But most of the comments to the story were all about bloody horses on the road. You know, it was all that. I was, you know, feel for the woman. She then went, it says at the end, she then went to KFC next door to buy, and they were fine with it.
It just says, no, it doesn't say, it says a chicken restaurant.
Oh, it doesn't even say
it's a chicken restaurant.
Which makes sense to me, because, like, well, if they're serving chickens, then they may as well serve other animals, so.
Well,
there's something delightfully and ironically decadent about going to McDonald's in a horse and carriage.
What was the horse eating? Should we get the RSPCA onto the site? Were they feeding this horse burgers?
Maybe it's the horseradish in the burger makes the horses go mad. it's like cannibalism. They're just freak out.
This also reminds me. Last week we had a story about basically a guy trying to take a horse into a variety of different
on the train.
And then he started like taking the hospital and saying, "Can I have a doctor for this horse?" And they're like, "No, this is a human person hospital."
I missed that addendum. Was that on the same story?
Yes. All week, it was just like, yeah, this guy's just blatantly going around.
Are you sure that wasn't... I know that most of the newspapers tried to make horse-based puns for where he was going. And one of them said that he was going to go to a horse doctor.
Because he had a sore throat. Because he was feeling a little hoarse. Mm.
And then he was going to go to a bar and get asked why the long face. This was actually a thing. I think the conclusion that we came to last week was that this was just a guy stuck in believing that the world was a point-and-click adventure. And was just trying to... And we're just trying to use the horse.
Use horse on everything. It's like, I had the horse, I'm stuck, I haven't had any progress for ages, I must use the horse on everything. Yeah. Use horse and carriage on McDonald's. No.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Use on KFC? Fine. Not a chicken restaurant.
Use on chicken restaurant? Fine.
And now I have some chicken in my inventory. And I've got a horse and a chicken in my inventory. Let's go to the zoo and look at the pandas.
Yeah, well, this is this new point and click adventure, collect the animals.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If you've got any comments about any of our wonderful animal stories, you can get in touch with us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or via the web form on www.camfm.co.uk and clicking on our player. We'll be back with some more news stories after this brief musical interlude.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of All on Cam FM. That was Hysteria by Muse, and we're talking about silly news from the past week. I'm Michael Quintero, and I'm joined by Dave Birch.
Hello.
And Tom Woolley.
How do?
Now, on our next section, we're going to start with a slightly unusual setup in a prison. In Chihuahua City Jail.
Good name already. You know it's going to be a good story good when it's in Chihuahua.
Yeah. Hang on, I thought we were done with the animals.
I'll say the little dogs there, you know.
Yes, well, in Chihuahua City Jail, which I'm assuming isn't just an entire city of Chihuahuas.
It's pretty woof in that city.
Oh dear.
The police have discovered that there's a bar inside the jail.
A bar?
A bar.
Oh, sorry.
A bar inside Chihuahua jail. That's a torrid tale.
Should we start the story again? Let's be serious about this story. News story.
No, sorry. We don't be serious.
It's dog eat dog in there.
Anyway, get to the point of the story, Michael. Let's do that.
Yeah, the police have discovered that there's a bar in there selling beer, tequila and vodka to the inmates.
It's worth pointing out, I think, that this is a bar that was being run by the inmates without the knowledge of the prison staff, not the prison staff just running a bar, which would be...
Although, it's not mentioned. Did the prison staff partake in the alcohol? It's not mentioned that it was just between the prisoners. Because they seem to have quite a lot of stash. I mean, you have a list of what was there.
Yeah.
You
wanna... yeah. 200 beer cans?
12 bottles of tequila. 20 bottles of vodka. And these I could understand if you were smuggling them in. You've got 200 beer cans, sure. You can take them in one at a time. You know, 12 bottles of tequila, 20 of vodka.
Whoa. You could understand them getting them in, but where would you store them?
Well, under the billiard table that they also had in the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Because
no one checks the billiard table.
How do you smuggle a billiard table into a prison? I mean, you can fit a under your coat, maybe. You can fit, like, a can of beer or a bottle or something. But a billiard table?
It doesn't say what size billiard table it is. So that's just one of those tiny little... tiny little plastic ones.
You wouldn't be able to fit 200 cans of beer under that.
You could stack them up.
Yes, I think the authorities must have known about it. So
it just says the bar also had a billiard table. No explanation. That's what I want to know about.
I was wondering whether it was just that they'd happen to be getting confused, going, oh, this is a private recreation room for our prisoners. We put a billiard table in there. They seem to be coming out very happy about having played a game of billiards.
Drunk on happiness.
Delirious, yeah. But you also noticed something at the end of the story, didn't you?
The final... This is on The Guardian. The final line of the story is, meanwhile, 17 inmates escaped from another northern prison, apparently using a tunnel they had dug from the laundry room.
Would the Chihuahuas have dug that tunnel, do you think?
It's not the digging of the tunnel that really threw me about. It's the word meanwhile. As if the bar... Discovering the bar was a distraction that one prison set up so that while everyone was investigating how this massive bar got there, the 17 prisoners from another prison just happened to... Oh, they're all distracted, stealing all, taking all the booze away from the prisoners. Now's our chance. Let's go.
You know, I think this is the storyline for Ocean's 14.
Ocean's 17. There's 17 inmates escaped. Oh,
maybe. Ocean's 17. This will be brilliant. We'll get Brad Pitt in. We'll explain it. He loves it. Great.
And so that's like that's quite some planning to manage to get...
Have you seen the other Ocean films? How tenuously planned they are.
This is managed to get seven... You managed to get all this stuff smuggled into the other bar, other prison in the first place, and then found out specifically at the time you're going to escape through your tunnel from the Okay, also, it's in the laundry room. What did they dig with? And secondly, what did the prison guards think they were doing in there?
They were coming out dirtier, or maybe they were cleaning all the clothes that had the dirt on them and not digging. Okay.
When you do your laundry, you get that little scoop for the soap powder.
Oh, genius.
So genius, that's how you dig. like...
But still, what were they doing in there? Like, I have to make sure that the spin cycle is going on, and I can't leave until the spin cycle...
You've got the perfect cover there. You've got the sound, and you've got the little scoop. You know, if I'm in prison, I want you two with me. You'll
I guess it's noisy, isn't it? So you can cover up the sounds a bit.
So, yeah, if you're listening to this in prison, go down to the washrooms. You've got a little scoop down there.
just you really like clean clothes. That's your excuse. Really like clean clothes.
And make sure to leave any alcohol you've smuggled in on the opposite side of the compound. Or even better, in the next prison.
Yeah. Different prison. Get some chihuahuas in. I think that's the moral of the story. I don't know.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the first story in this section. Moving swiftly on. Now we have a... Quite an inspiring story, actually. We have lots of stories on this show about things going wrong, but it's nice every now and again to have one who'd like inspire you, make you go to higher heights, as it were, for this story. Because this is a boy of 16 from Surbiton. Sorry, I kept on getting stuff on suburb then. He's in southwest London. Has climbed the highest mountain in every continent. And was the youngest person to have ever done so.
It's the Seven Peaks Challenge, I believe.
Yep. Oh, so you
seven summits. You've got to go for the alliteration.
Oh, seven. Yes, of course. That gives me there's a chance that he's in peak condition as well.
But you start off with the story by saying it's inspirational. I would say annoying. Because if you're ever at a party with this guy, you're just going to be bored off your socks. It's like, yes, when I was 11, I walked up Kilimanjaro, very, very long way. And when I was 12, I did Mount Everest. And just a boring guy. I mean, it's great that he did it. I'm very impressed.
I mean, he's really pleased with it. He's on top of the world.
But he's just going to be dull. What stories can you bring back from there? There was not much up there. I nearly passed out a few times from lack of oxygen.
Also, it's like, where do you go from here?
Yeah, no, exactly. Where do you go from here? Maybe the trenches, all the trenches.
He's pretty young. I mean, he could do 20, 30 years' time. He could do Olympus Mons. If we get the space program up,
it's looking far into the future there, but it's a nice idea.
No, I'd like to. There is the obvious thing of like North and South Pole. I think that's the next bit of the challenge. There's another challenge, which is the Seven Summits plus the North and South Pole. So you can do that.
Do you think his parents love him? Well, they just keep sending him off to.
Would he have to do the poles again? So another poles. Would you have to do the mountains again? He's not done the poles. That makes no sense. Would he have to do the mountains again?
No. They already count.
You know? When I was young, when I was a teenager, my parents often told me to go get lost. I think he's just taking it a little bit too literally. And he's just gone, right, I'm off to Kilimanjaro then. And his parents went,
he's not got lost. He's got to the top. That is kind of like definitely not lost. It's like, where am I? I'm definitely on the top of Everest.
Good point.
And that's not lost at all. But no, his mother, Penny, when it said that she felt elated and emotional. So, but stepping aside from the fact that elation is an emotion to start with, it's like, how vague is that? I feel emotional. I feel I have some emotions.
A feeling.
I feel feelings.
I am not a soulless android, devoid of all human emotion, or a Vulcan.
I'm also thinking ideas.
I'm breathing.
Breathing breaths.
But yeah, she's not very specific on the emotion, so she could be, you know, furious that, you know, where has he been all this time? We told him, we thought he was a joke, and now he's on Mount Everest.
He's like, tell us about your son. Well, he's one of my children.
He's a boy. Likes climbing.
Indeed. It said at the end of this, I think, that when he got to the top of Everest, the weather was good. And the top of Everest is above the cloud bank, so the weather's always good.
Oh, no. No, not. It must get really bad, like, winds up there. I mean, I've never walked up there, so I can't say from experience, but, you know, from the documentaries that I've seen, it gets pretty windy up there. You know, gale force things.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
If anyone's got any more information about prevailing weather conditions...
On the top of Everest,
that is something that we would very much like you to email in.
Okay, can I just say, well done to the guy. I know I'm being negative about his experience, saying he's boring and all that, but well done to the guy. It's some serious dedication there to climb all these things and not die. I'm just most impressed about that.
It's an amazing achievement. Yeah, yeah.
A big thank you to everyone who has helped George to achieve his dream.
I helped in my own special way.
I'm hoping that... he's not had any, like, really, what did you dream about last night, George? Oh, well, I went to Mars. And he's like, oh.
Isn't everyday life going to seem boring now? You come home, you've got to go to school. Because, I mean, he's still a teenager. He has to, like, do his GCSEs now. I mean, he'd be really good on his geography GCSE. But just...
Oh, he's going to get some teasing in school. So what did you do for your holidays? Oh, you climbed another mountain, like every year. What's your show and tell? The top of a mountain. You brought us the top of a mountain.
That would be magnificent, though, to come in and bring top of Mount Olympus. Or bring one of the flags that we put up there.
Well, you can make it into a film, the boy who went up a mountain and came down a mountain with the top of the mountain.
I can imagine this being a film. Richard Curtis would write the story. It'll be a feel-good film of the summer.
A young boy struggling to achieve his dream under mountain pressure.
Gale force winds, or maybe not, we're not sure. There would be the tension, maybe.
Driven only by his prophetic dreams.
Yep. I'm sure we could get Brian Blessed in on this. Wait, prophetic, not... Did you say pathetic or prophetic?
I said prophetic dreams about mountains.
Well, they said a big thank you to everyone who's helped George to achieve his dreams, obviously.
Oh, I see, he must have seen it beforehand. Either that or afterwards, and he's already achieved them, but that makes very little sense.
Just like that, and getting up to the top, it's like, hang on, this looks familiar.
Actually, we should actually say happy birthday to him, because I'm reading this article. He's actually when he did this, he was 16 and 362
days.
62 days. And so it's actually his birthday today. So I think we should all say happy birthday to him. You know, we've taken the mick out of him, so let's you know, be nice.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, George.
Happy birthday.
And may you climb some more things.
And possibly do some more outrageous activities that will get you into future news stories so you can talk about you again.
Yeah, the cookies are on the top shelf, so if you want to start climbing...
Future adventures, definitely recommended.
And finally for this section, this is a news story which apparently isn't the news story that I thought it was. Because the news story that we found and has been widely reported is Denmark bans Marmite.
Utter rubbish. That's a rubbish. On hearing this, one of my friends on Twitter actually forwarded the Danish embassy in London's stand on this, and it starts with the title, Marmite and Similar Products Not Banned in Denmark.
Can I just interject here and say how wonderful it is that this
research.
Is what embassies do. They just kind of like go, no, that's not, your product is not banned where we come from. It's just like that's their key job, or occasionally getting offended by like how their country is presented on TV. This seems to be the two things.
Although the Guardian, I mean, the way the Guardian's putting this, it does seem to be a big story over there.
They do have a big picture of a Marmite jar with a giant red line through it.
Anyway, the stand from the ambassador,
practically a two-page spread.
It really, neither Marmite nor Vegemite and similar products have been banned by the Danish Food and Veterinary Administration. However, there is more to this. However, fortified foods with added vitamins and minerals and other substances cannot be marketed in Denmark unless approved by Danish food authorities. So you can buy it, you just can't advertise it.
Yeah, you can't advertise foods with vitamins added to them because the Danish government hates public health. I don't understand. It's like, this is healthier for you, therefore you cannot advertise it. It speaks for itself. It's unfair on the other products. We're going to have egalitarian...
You won't be on the same level here. But what's really interesting in this story is that they start off by saying that Marmite's slogan is, you either love it or hate it. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm not a huge fan.
No.
So, Michael? What?
I'm ambivalent.
You're ambivalent?
I have just disproved...
Not conform.
I say all three of us are all sort of, well, we could hate or leave it.
I do hate it.
Oh, you do? You're a hater. Yeah. Okay.
But I'm a good hater.
What if the Guardian was really on the ball? They should have had two articles written on this. One where, from a really perspective of, this is an outrage. We want Marmite all over Denmark. And the other one should be, great, it's out of there. Now we just need to get it out of Britain. You know, you should have had that two viewpoints.
It's something that they do for quite a few news stories, but sadly not for this one. I think you're right.
Definitely missed a trick. The thing I absolutely loved about this article was there's a quote halfway down, it's something in the article that says the government is having trouble retaining highly skilled foreign workers, and this latest move is unlikely to help.
Yeah,
as if your future job projects, you're going, well, I could move to Denmark, but I can't get Marmite there.
Forget it. They have Danish bacon, but forget it. I'm not going. I'm not going. Marmite.
No Marmite. I was thinking. Surely not. But then there's a quote from a lady at the bottom, Lindsay Jensen, and she's written and she said, but if they want to take my Marmite off me, they'll have to wrench it from my cold, dead hands.
Yeah, it's quite sinister, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe people are taking this seriously, even though, you know, it's not actually banned. Maybe people are really worried about this.
Or maybe it's just the news creating a storm in a teacup.
Is that a product that we're not allowed to advertise?
A storm in a teacup. Yeah. Very dangerous. It's against health and safety.
It contains extra electrolytes that you would not find in normal tea.
Exactly.
Therefore, we're not allowed.
Comes in Earl Grey flavor.
We can't serve it to you if you're driving a horse and carriage.
That's, yeah. Or if you're a panda.
Have you got any comments on these? I'm glad to hear that Marmite is not, in fact, banned in Denmark. You can get in touch with us.
It should be.
It just can't be marketed.
studio@camfm.co.uk for the emails, or via the web form, which is on www.camfm.co.uk. Click on our online player and fill in the form. And we'll be back once more after another brief musical break.
Your city.
Your station. Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst of World Live on Cam FM. That was Wonderwall by Oasis. And we're talking here about unusual news stories with me, Michael Quintario, and my guest, Dave Birch.
Good afternoon.
And Tom Woolley.
G'day.
And we're going to move on now to our science story of the week, which is quite appropriate because we have got two physicists and a mathematician in here, which makes us sound like some sort of joke.
Two physicists and a mathematician walk into a radio station.
We've actually, this place is a bit like a prison cell, but we do have a bar down here.
Send help.
He's trapped us.
We don't even have a scoop to dig our way out, like the chihuahuas.
There's no laundry down here.
But anyway, getting to the actual story. The most precise measurements of the roundness of the electron say, well, it's round.
It's very round.
I was expecting you to just keep on going very for the next 15 minutes and then until we finish the show.
Imagine a basketball. Rounder than that.
Yeah, it's definitely rounder than anything else that's round.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we actually had the Gravity Probe B story on Burst Bubble a few weeks back. And in there.
Did you as a guest? Actually,
yeah.
In the studio.
In the studio, Gravity Probe B! No, there's a story. But basically, we were talking about Gravity Probe B, about how the stuff in that, we've made the roundest balls that the human race have ever manufactured.
Oh, I think I heard that.
It's just like it's starting to become a competition. Who can be the roundest?
wasn't that one of the original arguments for going in space? Because people were like, well, why do we want to go into the space? Who cares? And one of the arguments was we could actually make the roundest ball bearings possible, and that we could actually put those and they'd be really well.
We just take them back down.
But they would cost a huge amount of money, so it's not really practical.
So, space industry, if you can get up there cheaply, is there's certain things that you can do in zero gravity which are you really want to do in space if you can get away with it. If you had a space elevator, then it would be brilliant to make things like ball bearings in space.
The way they used to make drop shots was that they had drop towers where they just drop the lead and it would form into a ball as it was dropping.
I've actually done something similar to that with salt.
What, in space?
Not in space, but no, dropping salt. Melting it and then dropping it.
Melting salt?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do
that. There was, we did a physics balls. Practical on this. Getting back to the story, electrons are very, very, very round. But
you missed out several verys.
they're a bit less round at the moment because I'm thinking that presumably this is an electron that's not moving, that's at like 0 degrees Kelvin in space and no electric field. And
oh no, they did use electric fields. I mean, I don't actually personally know how they did this experiment
to hold it in place.
They used the electric fields to see how the density of charge changed, and because it was appeared to be symmetric everywhere.
So if you could get it in a situation where it was completely away from all of the influences, then it would be round. But that doesn't actually exist. You can't ever get in the situation where it would be that round, because you're always going to have gravity or an electric field from somewhere that's affecting it. Mm. So an electron that is this round doesn't really exist. So you're saying, well, the theoretical maximum of the roundness, this theoretical construct could be, is very round. And if it's only theoretic, then you could just say, well, a theoretic sphere is perfectly round. So it's as round as anything could be, but you can't get that round.
I'm sensing some anger in you.
I don't understand it. It's physics, and I don't understand.
Well, apparently, were the electron scale to the size of the solar system, any deviation from its roundness would be smaller than the width of human hair, according to this team.
That is pretty round.
I've recently been trying to set up some funding to carry on with my academia. And whenever you're filling in these sheets of paper, you have to put down, what will you gain out of this? What tangible thing can we have at the end to say that you did your research?
Why should we fund you?
Yeah, why should we fund you? What can we get out of this? So I just sort of wonder what these guys wrote on their funding bid. We want to find out how round an electron is. Why?
We want the best definition of round so there'll be no loose turnitures in the pub.
Yeah. That's really all you can do.
I'm struggling to come up with something for this. Like,
I mean, I'm a mathematician, so I do science for science's sake. But there I just want to know, what did they have some evidence on one of the funding committee? Do they know some secrets that I don't?
There is funding for science just for the sake of science.
Really? Where is it? How do I get it?
It's hard to get hold of, but there is funding for just science. I mean, Cambridge University does quite a lot of funding for just science.
I'd say the pure mathematicians must find it really difficult. I'm an applied mathematician.
Well, pure mathematics isn't science; it's maths.
That's true.
Before we insult half of the mathematical population of Cambridge,
they're not listening.
Which will be most of our listeners, if any,
and us in here actually.
The guy who's been involved, Joni Hudson, who's a physicist at Imperial College London, where they did this, said, we've been working this for a long time. We've had a lot of ups and downs, apparently everywhere but on the electron.
Quite strange measurements.
Yeah. Ups and downs are going into quarks, so very good.
We had top and bottom of the tail.
But they didn't go so far as we did. They just said it is very, very round.
Oh, yeah. Very, very round.
They asked him what the point of his research was, and he said that there wasn't really much point, but there was a certain charm to it. Finish the set.
But I actually say what this does go on to. I was reading it and saying it comes down to supersymmetry. I'm a mathematician, as I said, so I'm falling into areas that I don't know much about, and you'll probably shoot me down. But apparently, supersymmetry predicts certain particles. And
yeah, like Higgs boson.
Like Higgs boson. And they were saying because you have the supersymmetry, you need a little bit of asymmetry in the electron. And since they can't find it, it does actually question whether supersymmetry is the right model to be using.
Mm. Yet another nail in the coffin of the standard model of physics.
Yeah. Okay, moving on from science. I think that's enough science for now.
Physics is broken to me. It's dead to me.
let's now go into something which uses science, but is very what is not science.
Is that capital science with a trademark at the end of it? Is that,
yeah. Science has a trademark?
Yeah, science, for the power of science.
Yeah, you can't actually say that. We're going to have to cut all of this.
This is live. No.
This is live.
Yeah. Okay, so moving swiftly on.
I'm not going to say anything.
Egyptian pyramids have been found by infrared satellite images. Now, when I first read this, my first thought was, how do you lose a pyramid? Kind of like
David Copperfield. I mean, he managed to make the Statue of Liberty vanish. So if you can do that, don't let him into Egypt.
I suppose it's just like a magician palming a Toblerone, but on a bigger scale.
How many magicians have you seen palming a Toblerone?
I don't know, but I think it would be possible.
I'm taking that as a metaphor.
No, it sounds bad, actually.
Anyway, but if you're actually listening to this and you have access to the internet, go to the BBC and look this new story up, because they have two pictures. So one is Egypt, as it looks normally from the air, and the other is the infrared photo they have.
And they look the same to me.
We've all looked at this. Oh, wait, it looks black and white. We've all looked at this, and we can't see a damn thing. And they even actually highlight in the second picture where the pyramid is meant to be.
Yeah, it looks like they've coloured the roads into me. It does look like somebody's gone over the black and white photo with crayon and said, here it is, and there's like a box around it, and I'm looking at the box and thinking...
It's the Where's Wally of pyramids.
It's really hard to see the pyramids.
If it's Where's Wally, though, does that mean there's lots of other... a list of little other things that you can discover in the photo? Like, Wally is a thing that everyone looks for, and everyone knows where it is, but you've got to find six wrenches.
Look for the mummy's curse.
Can you see the Sphinx? And one of the pyramids, the layers of it were red and white stripes. which is the one that you're looking
everyone,
for.
Yeah, everyone has stripes. I mean,
I think the quite a lot of newspapers actually reported this. This was all over the news. Because there's a lot of buildings that have been found here in Egypt. It's not just like a couple of pyramids.
They are actually the kind of like underground buildings, and that's why they were in fact lost.
Yeah, so it's quite easy to lose someone when it's buried.
I think that.
It does stay where you put it.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
But again, I suppose most things that people lose.
This isn't Stargate.
Yeah, but that might not move, but you will. You can't just stay there. There it is. I've got to go home now.
You could put a sign up.
And it's in the desert. You know, every bit of desert looks the same.
It is a good point. Yeah, I guess you could. You could lose a sandy coloured pyramid in a sandy desert.
A piece of sandpaper in the desert.
Yeah.
I'm sure I had some.
It's around here somewhere. Now, I think the newspapers missed a bit of a trick here, because I really love pun headlines on newspapers, especially the cheaper ones that use puns for their entertainment. And not a single one said scientists use infrared to triangulate the position of pyramids. Mm. Not a single one used that pun. And it's,
well, are they triangulating? I don't think it's quite correct. So probably they were.
Oh no, you're not getting technical on what triangulation means. No, this is a pun.
That's true, but I think the papers knew what triangulation meant, and they wouldn't do it out.
They wouldn't insult our intelligence
exactly.
with that.
Yeah.
One thing that I like from this story is that U.S. Egyptologist Dr. Sarah Pakak, who was heading the team that discovered these, said, "For me, the aha moment was when I could step back and look at everything that we found, and I couldn't believe we could locate so many sites all over Egypt." Like, is that Aha's new album? isn't that Aha? All I know is "Take on Me."
They're making a comeback.
Yeah, the new Egypt themed album.
Yeah, they're actually mummified in the '80s, and so they look as fresh as ever.
They're doing a cover of a Bangles song.
Mm. Don't say the word.
No, I don't. Michael hasn't.
Got the joke, I would say Michael hasn't got the joke. But if you got the joke, well done. Explain it to the person next to you.
We won't. They found pyramids. They found what, 2,000 buildings underground in Egypt.
You know, that quite matter of factly. I found my keys this morning. They found a few pyramids. It's quite a big thing that they did.
Their pyramid is definitionally quite a big thing. Yes.
And I like also that there's a quote here. Indiana Jones is old school. We've moved on from Indy. Sorry, Harrison Ford.
He's going to be really put out. Up.
Yeah, he's crying himself to sleep.
He's like, oh. Yeah. He's just sitting at home saying, "I want my mummy.
I don't need an infrared. I just need a whip."
I also like the title that this news article has given Dr. Sarah Pakak, which is "Space Archaeologist."
Space archaeology. Oh, that is an expanding field. That is brilliant. It's well worth going into.
I do admit that the title does make it sound a lot more grand than it is. Like, pyramids found from space.
Isn't that the plot of Stargate or something?
Yeah, no, exactly. It is.
Well, we were talking about moving pyramids. I mean, in Stargate, they're actually spaceships that you can pick up and move around. So maybe that's why
I just went and picked up a spaceship.
Yeah, your size doesn't actually come over the radio, but Dave is actually 70 feet tall.
Yeah, it was a right pain.
I was talking about palming Toblerones, actually, personally would just pyramid in my pocket.
Not so much palm, it's just like hide behind little finger.
I'm miming. No one at home can
see this. Unless you're on the webcam.
Oh, hello.
Wave to the webcam.
Moving on to our final story of the week. An Italian town is offering free beach umbrella rental to the poor.
To poor people,
yes, because not just like they, not like poor pandas or anything. But this is a Tuscan town offering 3 days on the beach to low-income locals, apparently.
Yeah, so I mean, the thrust of this article is that it keeps mentioning that the Italians think that you should have holidays in the sun, get out of the house and go be in the sun, and you'll feel all great and it'll rejuvenate you. But I can see lots of skin cancer coming this way. Next year, we're going to be reporting about a rise in skin cancer.
Now, this is why the beach umbrellas. Because it actually says, and one of the things that they say is the benefits of being at the seaside. So now they can get the benefits of being seaside without getting the sunburn.
Also, it does mention that they believe it's good to breathe the iodine in the air. Now, that sounds a bit pseudoscience-y to me. So if anyone's out there who actually knows about this and breathing iodine is good for you, please get in touch. But it sounds weird.
Mm. Yeah, they were saying that the Italians apparently have this belief that sea air is very good for you, and staying indoors and like especially in air conditioned offices could give you like a cold or muscular problems. I think it says somewhere.
Yeah, so they don't turn it down; they put on scarves instead. I think that's what it says.
They don't turn the aircon down; they put scarves on. But I thought this sounds a bit silly. But I work with an Italian person, and they're always wearing a scarf in the office every day.
Really? Yeah, is that not a fashion thing? Because Italians are very fashion.
No, only when the aircon's on. So they have a scarf which they keep at work, and if we turn the air conditioning on, they put a scarf on.
Really? Yeah. Well, there you go. Proven fact.
Proven fact. Proof by one example.
That's good enough for
the
me.
The best kind of proof. I have an anecdote about this. It must be true.
But yeah, it's like we're targeting the elderly and mostly kids who could do a bit of a break at the seaside. So the town's assessor for social politics.
I don't like the fact that the town's assessor for social politics is saying they're targeting the elderly. That just sounds quite sinister.
I can see where you're going. But it does mention in the article that they're doing this instead of other measures because they have a bit of a problem at the moment with the cash flow. And so they've got, instead of doing food stamps or, giving them money, they're going to have days at the beach. Do we think that's going to work? Do you think they'll be happy?
They're just giving them the rental of the umbrella for free. You can go to the beach without an umbrella.
I say skin cancer. Whoosh.
Yeah, apparently, though, that all of the beaches like taken over by these clubs, which put sun lounges and deck chairs and umbrellas and stuff up. So perhaps you can't. Perhaps this is the only chance they've got of seeing the sea. And would you deny them that?
I personally wouldn't. But I think if I were in their position, and it came down to food or the sea side with sand. Actually, to be honest, I hate sand. And I won't go into it now, but there's a whole list of reasons why I detest sand. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer for me. Water, I can deal with.
Are you always losing your pyramids?
One is careless, two. Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to have to finish up. Thank you very much to Tom and Dave for coming in. And I hope you enjoyed the show. See you next week.